Eric, man.
Hey, Charles, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. It's been a while since we chatted.
Yes, that's true.
And we have been communicating maybe virtually, and you've been kind of doing a lot of thinking about latency and native relativity, and what's going on, man? I like the idea of coming in, talking to you about what's on your mind, specifically related to what I just said. Latency, native, what's going on?
All right, sure. So I think most people, or a lot of people, have seen Aaron's, who is actually next door here, the interview with Aaron about native RX.
Yep.
So we've actually been doing quite a lot of native work, as we promised. It took a while longer than we hoped for, but there you go, it's there. And indeed, I've been thinking quite a lot about native and layers of abstraction and so on. So let's talk a little bit about that. Let me kind of, first show the viewers here. There was a nice article on Architects D-Zone. I don't know if you can see. We probably kind of will
it's
give
pretty
you a
right.
Like pretty,
yeah,
but
yeah.
This is, so Peter Norvig had the kind of these kind of numbers about the difference in latency, and I think differences in latency is one of the things that I think is very important for programmers to think about. So if you look at your code, and let's draw a bubble. Now, and this bubble here is a kind of a latency boundary. So suppose this is a latency, and I'm talking like orders of magnitude here, right? So let's say this is latency like order of magnitude 1. So this is kind of the fastest that you can go, and now you might have something where it takes 10 times longer. So maybe here's you're running in memory in the cache, and maybe here you have to kind of grab something from an SSD. I don't know, like the numbers there, that says every programmer should know. So I kind of there's like a whole list. So I will make lots of mistakes as I'm doing here, but it's really kind of the importance is the kind of different kind of latency groups here. So this is like an equivalence class of operations that kind of require a latency. So maybe and there's going to be several orders of magnitude difference. So now maybe I should say 10 to the power of something.
Okay.
But anyway, so if you look at your code, normally, when you just look at regular code with curly braces, I write, int foo, some arguments, and now in here I say, var z equals bar of some arguments. If you look at this code, this doesn't look like a closing brace, come on, Eric. If you look at this code, there's nothing in syntactically here that tells you, anything about the latency of that call, right? And so with C# async, you can put here, if you know that this thing takes a long time, you can say await here, and then this thing returns a task of int, and so on. So you can kind of there is support for that, but even here, if you put an await, it can still be, that there's this thing takes a factor of 10, but maybe there's a bash that you're calling that kind of, is 1,000 times slower. So the await helps a little bit, but it's still not kind of, fine enough to make all the difference between these things. And now to go back to native versus managed versus whatever. For me, that's all about the relative where you are in the stack. So if you're kind of down here where you're the fastest kind of bubble, then you being close to the machine is super important, because there you want to lose as little time as possible. But if you're here, at some kind of in a higher bubble, and you're making lots of network calls, in that case, you can do, if this is seconds, say this is 1,000 seconds, in 1,000 seconds, that a round trip takes or some other operation takes, you can do a lot of work. So there, you don't need to maybe be so concerned with like micro efficiency. So it's all about abstraction. Mm-hmm. And abstraction means leaving out unnecessary details. And certain details are important at one layer that are not important at a different layer. So that is, I think, my real thing. It's like, I don't think it's an absolute measure. It's all relative. It's like, depending where you are, you have to kind of, you know, deal with the details that are relevant for that aspect. Mm. Now, here we're talking about latency. So I have, let's use some color coding here. And again, everybody should read this article.
Yes.
Because I'm just here using fake numbers just to kind of give you the kind of, you know, relative differences. So Lewis latency, and historically we have mostly talked about, when we talk about efficiency, we talk about memory use and time use. So if you have a nested loop, doubly nested loop, your algorithm is quadratic, so you kind of know how long it takes to compute. Mm. Or, you know, you have a linked list, you know that it's that the space usage is linear in the number of elements. Those are relatively easy to reason about, but maybe they are less important. If you have something quadratic here, you know, you might be able to finish that work, you know, depending on the latency and the size. So you have to be very careful. Just saying this is quadratic, so it's bad, is not, you know, you have to think about that answer. Or space use is another one. But besides latency, we also need to think about energy efficiency. Mm. So how much energy does your computation use? And let's do that in red here. So maybe, you know, again, something takes one, or 10 units, or 100 units, I don't know.
Herb calls it cost per watt.
Yep. Okay, that's a good one, cost per watt. And that also, again, is like, depends completely on the device. So for, you know, in some sense, if I'm like, I'm obviously a hippie, so I care about energy use in general, but, you know, just for the sake of argument, my desktop here, you know, I don't really care about energy. I like my room to be hot, so if this computer runs hot, it's okay. On your phone, you know, you care about battery life, so you want to kind of be super energy efficient. Maybe, you know, if you're in a data center, you could also say, you know, there, depending on, maybe you can say the energy is cheap there, so you put all your energy consuming things in the data center, or you say, you know, you put it like, you know, spread it out over the desktops. But these are, again, decisions that you have to make for your application. So it becomes a detail that's relevant, whereas normally on a regular PC, that's a detail that people hardly ever think about. You know, I don't know, you know, if I run on a traditional desktop, how much energy, you know, the C# compiler uses. It doesn't really matter.
Okay.
Now, the thing is that what people then try to do is, that's, I think, where there's a nice interference between these two. If you want to have low energy, say, on your mobile device, you need to move the computation somewhere else. So suppose, you know, I'm using 10 energy units to, you know, maybe to JIT my program.
Okay.
And I don't want to kind of take that hit, because why would I, you know, run something on my phone that's not necessary?
Yep.
Right, that I can factor out. So I can move from here to here, but in order to do that, my code has to go, you know, now suddenly I have to, so in order to, and I don't know, I'm just making up these graphs here. In order to move energy-wise from factor 10 to factor 1, it might mean that because of that, performance-wise, latency-wise, I move from 1 to 1,000. Because now I kind of have to kind of, you know, run some computation somewhere else. So I'm kind of, you know, trading, you know, time for energy. And we all know, kind of, you know, that's all what programming is about, is the kind of the trade-off between, you know, space and time, or the trade-off between latency and energy. Mm-hmm. And so I think there's some grand unified theory waiting to be discovered, where you can talk about all these, you know, these kind of trade-offs.
Sure. Now, when you say talk about them, do you mean describe them in an abstraction in the programming language? Or is it just purely a conceptual thing developers need to understand?
That's a very good question. So I think, first of all, before we can kind of make this formal, you have to be able to, or if you bake that into the programming language, you have to have a conceptual model, because if you would bake it into programming language, that's a formalization of that informal idea. Mm-hmm. And let's kind of look back at this thing again. So currently our programming languages don't surface those details, right? This, you know, as I said, this method call here just looks like any other method call. There's no way I can look at this thing and say this takes, you know, much longer than something else.
Sure.
Maybe when I put an await there, but again, then, you know, you still don't know in what kind of bubble you are. And there's other things here too, because if I look at this thing, I cannot see how much space this uses or energy. So I think what would be nice if the only thing that we can talk about really is the type, what are the set of values. Hmm. But you could also say is that the energy use, instead of saying this returns an int, which tells you something about the set of values, maybe the type could tell you also like how much energy it costs to produce that.
Yes.
Because it's like an effect, right? It's the same thing as, like, you know, you can say this might throw an exception, which is an effect, or it changes the state. So I think that there's like something where you can reason about these things, or the latency, you know, and then I can say, and then you can think about an algebra. If I'm calling something that has like this latency, then the composition, the whole function, you know, I can kind of, you know, just do like inferring this type, I can kind of, you know, find what the latency is.
Interesting.
And things like profilers and so on, if you look in Visual Studio or in Eclipse or whatever, IDEs, we do space profiling and time profiling, right? You can see, okay, how much time is spent in this call, how much space is used here. But of course, you want to have all kind of other things. I want to kind of have energy profiling too. Mm-hmm. And so Dragos, my friend who I worked with in the Windows Phone team, he worked for a while on performance there, and especially energy use. Mm. And he has some great kind of graphs. He gave talks at JAO, I think, or GoTo. If you go to the website there, I think his slides are there. So what he shows, for example, if you use the GPS, you can see kind of, you know, spikes in energy use. Or if you make a network call, here I'm saying, you know, there's latency, but the network call itself also uses energy, because now suddenly you have to kind of send bits over, you know, wireless. Hmm. So maybe, you know, sending the code over to be kind of, you know, pre-processed and getting it back might cost more energy, because I have to kind of, you know, use my radio chips. Hmm. So these things are all kind of, you know, hard to kind of reason about without measuring their real effect.
So I have a question.
Yes.
I mean, and this could be due to, you know, maybe my lack of understanding of energy, although I do remember physics in college. So in some sense, the energy is going to be spent. There is an absolute amount of energy required for this algorithm to compute, to complete, whether it happens on your phone or in the cloud. Somewhere the energy gets spent. So what I'm asking is, write less code, man. Isn't that the goal? That's really my question. Is the energy usage absolute?
Okay, so that's a nice philosophical question. So let me try to answer that, or let's kind of brainstorm around it. Because in some sense, that's the same question that you can ask about the computational complexity. So you can say, can this algorithm, is that P equals NP, right?
Okay.
What you're kind of asking is there something like P equals NP for energy? So, and I think it's like, can this algorithm be solved in, you know, linear time or not, right? And I think, and maybe, you know, it can be solved in linear time, but maybe you do it in quadratic time, and the lines of code for the quadratic solution are less than the linear time solution. So I don't think it's a matter of writing less code.
Okay.
And now the thing is that what can happen is because I vector my program so to run, you know, across different machines, the total amount of energy that it takes might go up, right? Because you have to pump electrons across the world.
Yes.
So there's a lot of energy. But if the goal is to have less energy on the device, then it's okay. But totally, you know, so maybe if you're like a hippie, now your total energy use will go up. Mm. You're just pushing it from one side to the other. But it's an interesting...
But it's important, especially with this whole cloud computing. I mean, cloud computing costs energy. The bottom line, if you put all your computation in the cloud and everyone's running around with dumb clients or partially smart clients, phones, then how do you, in some sense, you need to have this sort of model well understood to ensure energy efficient cloud computing, energy efficient data centers, not just keeping them cool and all that stuff, but how do you ensure that you don't compute too much? That's in the hands of developers, right? Are we compute junkies?
Yeah. Yes.
All right.
But the thing is, like, I think what I would answer to you here, mm-hmm, is that we don't know what we're doing, right? Because if I show you a program, you know, you cannot tell me by inspecting the code, mm-hmm, how much energy this program will use and, you know, where it will go. And this becomes especially, I think, pressing in an open world, right? Because let's look at this thing, right? Where we said, like, we take some computation here from the device, and we were here, mm-hmm, where it was using 10, you know, what is it, calories per watt?
Cost per watt, whatever. Cost per transaction.
Okay. Whatever. So, and we want to move that from 10 to 1 on the device. Mm-hmm. Okay. But in order to do that, we had to kind of take computation that ran locally and run it remotely. Okay. Which now introduced latency. But now look at this thing, right? If this thing goes over the internet, it might go over, I don't know, maybe over, be routed over 10 different machines, which means that there's routers there, there's computers there, there's like cables. Mm. Think even the energy that it took to take a ship going from, you know, the US to Europe, laying a cable in the ocean. So in some sense, you have to kind of take all that energy into account too. So really the goal is to kind of, you know, push the energy usage away from the device, but that might multiply the total amount of energy to a very high level.
Interesting. It seems like when, you know, you and Brian did that excellent BMO episode recently about term rewriting and, you know, food nutrition labels.
Yep.
Maybe software, we need to have like energy labels for software.
That's a very creative... So I'm having my kind of, you know, the drinks.
What are you doing down there? You're making a concoction?
No, the drinks here match my shirt. Colors of my drinks, yeah.
I think you're going to be in advertising soon.
Okay.
Coke's going to come calling now.
But I think that's an excellent point. So if you look at nutrition labels, let's see if there's a nutrition label on here. Yes. Okay. So you take any food item, and everybody should watch that episode.
Yes.
It tells you kind of, you know, how much fat, how much carbohydrates, how much protein. Mm-hmm. So these are all different aspects of food. It's like, you know, it tastes good, right?
Yeah.
All the taste, no calories.
Mm-hmm.
But when you're dealing with food, you have some kind of, you know, this is like an abstraction that gives you the kind of, you know, main information about your food, such that when I create a larger meal, so if I use, like, you know, if I where did I read this? Or I was late night television. Mm-hmm. They were making cake with Coca-Cola.
Huh. Interesting.
Well, this is if you have real Coke with sugar. So,
yeah.
But if you want to kind of create a meal, what you do is you can then reason about the nutrition label of the total meal by kind of looking at these things. And that's what that episode with Brian is about. And I think what you're saying, and I really like that, and I'm kind of, yeah, I should have come up with that thing myself. But there is, like, you know, because we talked here about latency, energy, and we had, like, you know, space usage, and time usage. And in some sense, this is like a nutrition label for your coach. Right? And maybe also, there might be other things here, because if you're talking about network traffic, there's not only latency, there's also a whole SLA, like, you know, how reliable is this, and so on. So in some sense, yes, we should have like a nutrition label for code that we can look at to reason about different aspects of our code. And right now, I think we only have the two easy ones. And to go back to my favorite mechanism, monads, right? Which, in some sense, monads give you an effect, and that effect is a little bit like the nutrition label. But sometimes that's only one thing. So what you might want is that, you know, the effect of your computation is like a nutrition label, says, you know, with respect to latency is that, respect to energy it's this, and so here's, like, you know, your type of the computation is the result plus, you know, and something like that.
Sure.
Yeah, that's an interesting idea, but...
it would be good for people who, you know, want to be able to... I mean, think about this. I mean, it actually adds a new marketing capability for... Let's start a startup. We'll call it Green Code, man.
Yeah.
Guaranteed to use less energy than the other guys, man.
Yeah.
And here's why. Anyway.
Okay, so that is, by the way...
Just kidding.
No, because I think you're this isn't not a crazy idea, but I think it's quite hard because,
sure,
in some sense, and people may remember this from college when you talk about, like, if you look at complexity tier, like time complexity, right? There's, like, you know, sublinear, linear, whatever, exponential time. But the problem is that it's really hard to define a language or to restrict the expressiveness of your language to guarantee that you're in kind of a certain class. So suppose, you know, I want to kind of, you know, guarantee that my language only allows me to write programs that use, you know, so many watts per hour, right? I don't know if that's possible because, you know, the expressiveness, very soon your computation, your programming language can express all computable functions. It's Turing complete. So, and people have tried to kind of, you know, define languages that have, like, you know, for example, always terminate. And that's kind of, you can do that, it's called total functional programming, or where the programs always run in polynomial time. So it's kind of hard to restrict the expressiveness. And so for energy, I think...
But let me ask you, since you would know this,
yeah,
I mean...
Probably not, but...
No, but I mean, you're a computer scientist and you have been in this field for so long and you know lots of people. I mean, and when you think about it, in university, since you mentioned that, only recently did we start teaching students about things like security.
Yep.
When have we ever taught them about, you know what, the algorithm you wrote was good, but it's not energy efficient. Because what does that mean? So I guess my point is, it seems like today maybe you're right, but if there was a type system that had the ability to predict or at least infer or at least give you a hint about, you know what, the function that you're going to use, a lot of calories, man. Right?
Mm-hmm.
So why isn't that possible? Why is
energy
so hard?
People have done research about that. So there's, what is it called? Kolmogorov complexity or something, where people talk about, like, you know, how large does the code have to be? And so you can also think, it's like, how much energy do you have to use to compute these things? So people do
okay,
a lot of these things, but I think the problem is, how can you restrict the expressiveness? So how can you make sure that my, you know, in some sense it's a security thing too, right?
Mm-hmm.
Suppose that you're downloading an app, you might want to guarantee that this app cannot drain my battery, right? That's what you would like.
Yeah.
Well, I think that's kind of quite hard to guarantee. Just like it's impossible to show that, you know, if I download an app, that I can prove that it terminates in general, right? Because now you have solved the halting problem. So I think, so instead of trying to solve sort of these kind of fundamental things, I think just being able to reason about it or have some help, the same with termination, right? Even though you cannot in general prove that your program terminates, you can still, you know, have help where, you know, you can, you know, maybe you can give invariants and then the system helps you with the invariants and so on. But we don't know, I think, you know, how to do that yet. And I've often joked that in programming language or in computer science, we often solve the easy problems because, you know, it's kind of, you know, for, if you look at Turing machines, these are the things that you can kind of talk about, right? Like, you know, how much space you have and how much time. Mm-hmm. But for energy, what does that mean, for example? Because some chip, some processor mm-hmm. might have different energy characteristics than another. So maybe the same code running on an ARM or running on an x86 mm-hmm. may have completely different energy usage. I don't know. So these things are very now become dependent on the machine on which you run them.
Sure. Well, MSR does have something called Joule Meter. Remember that project that can measure, it actually measures how much energy an application is actually using. And so if there was like a Joule Meter service where you could say, I want to send this up to your service, you tell me how much, give me a food nutrition label for my app, it comes down, you stick it on, and be okay, on x86, I'm going to use this much energy, man. But then again, you could ask, but that infers that everyone's going to use the app the same way. But anyway, I understand. Yeah. It's a very hard problem. Developers need to think about this.
Yeah, so the most important thing, I think, is awareness. Right? You have to be aware that this suddenly becomes... But maybe at some point, imagine now that we... I don't know, right? And I'm not, you know, a physicist, but maybe we discover some kind of, you know, super battery technology where, you know, we can squeeze a lot of energy in a small space. Mm. Then all this, you know, then it doesn't matter where, you know, whether you use the energy, because say that, you know, you would not run out of battery for like a week. Mm. So again, it's like there's a lot of this thing, it reminds me a little bit of, if you look back in computer science, in the olden days, you know, you had like drum memory and people would optimize their programs, you know, to read and write from memory based on the kind of latency of the drum. So you would write something and then you would do some other computation just enough that when the drum was kind of right there that you could kind of then read or write a result. Hmm. And then, of course, the technology changes and then all that goes away. So you have to be kind of very careful with this too, because, you know, a lot of this is very much dependent on the current state of technology.
Sure.
And it's not very timeless.
Yeah.
But still important. And I, you know, maybe also like, you know, if you look at space, or maybe disk drives, you know, there the characteristics of disk drives and SSDs are very different. So maybe you have to program. So maybe we have to be more ready to throw away code and just kind of. Maybe the solution is to make programming language higher level such that we can kind of just say, oh, things have changed, throw away the code, let's start over. I don't know.
But that's great that you said that, because it segues excellently into the concept that you mentioned earlier about native relativity.
Yep.
And the relative nature of what it means to be native, since everything is native when it executes on a machine. So this is great. Let's talk a little bit about that, because in terms of latency, talking about making a network call, if I make a network call in C++ to a service, that has nothing to do with the latency of said service. Same with any other language. So that's what you're talking about, absolute latency based on physics. But I would say that if I wanted to use less energy and compute prime numbers, could you say that if I did it in, you know, a really low-level language, that I would use less energy than if I did it in a high-level language running in a virtual machine? That's the thing of relative nature, native, that I want to talk to you about.
Yes, and so I wouldn't know about energy because I can kind of, you know, because there, to be honest, I can imagine, for example, that if you can write an interpreter that runs inside the cache, you know, so that kind of, you know, makes sure that you don't jump around, maybe that one will be more energy efficient than, you know, writing something directly in machine code that kind of jumps around all over the place. So I think, talking about like absolute things, I don't think you can make an absolute kind of, you know, remark about that.
Okay.
What I do think is important, and this is for me, you know, like when is native versus non-native, again, it has all to do with abstraction. When are certain details relevant? So if you want to have control over the lowest level of things, then you must not hide that. So you must program at the appropriate level of abstraction.
Yep.
And then if certain details are not relevant, you can hide that, and then you can kind of climb up. So to me, that's the important thing. But even when people write assembly code, that's still not the lowest possible level, right? Because maybe the machine itself, you know, has some microcode, or maybe, you know, you're using FPGAs underneath, or
sure.
So there's always, you know, in the end, then you have to kind of, you know, solder your own circuits or whatever. So again, it's like all about finding the right level of abstraction. And I think if you're low in the stack, if you're writing operating system, you know, drivers, maybe even for drivers, people want to write drivers in higher level language. So I would say you have to pick the right level of abstraction, and there's no, you know, right or wrong. And I do believe that we were too easy to say, like, look, oh, this low level stuff, that's unimportant. So I think now that people have realized that sometimes, you know, if you really want control, you have to go close to the metal.
Sure.
So I think there's a pendulum, but I think the real solution is to say, look, there's no answer, just like here, you know, depending on what, it all depends on the context. And on the mobile device, you know, I want to use less energy, but then maybe I pay some other cost. On a desktop, well, I might want to use a lot of energy, but I want to be, you know, I don't want to do network traffic. So it's all a trade-off. And if you, which means that abstractions, you have to be able to switch abstractions as needed, as you please, I wanted to say. But
sure.
Usually it's not pleasant when you have to
change
abstractions. Does that make sense?
It makes sense. But in some sense, and we've had this conversation before, it's not as much about managed versus native anymore. I mean, that's not even interesting. What's really the issue is levels or degree of nativeness.
And I would say degrees of abstraction.
Exactly. How far away are you from the machine in an abstraction that's human composable and understandable is in some sense another way to define it, because in lower level languages, you're really programming as sort of like with the machine in mind, how it's going to move memory around, pointers to specific, you know, objects, layouts in memory, virtual tables, stuff like that. Whereas the farther you go up in abstraction, you don't think about that stuff. You're just focusing on your pure algorithm, for example.
Yes, but I would say I would stretch your definition a little bit, because it's not just about being close to the machine, right? Because maybe being close to the machine, I still cannot reason about the energy use, right? So it's about knowing, understanding what details are relevant, and then programming at the level where you have control over those details. Okay, and then for like and traditionally in native code, people say, and I think it's really it's not really space, but I'll use space anyway. They have control over memory, right? That's one of the things that people, like if you talk with C++ people, for example, right? They like to have control over memory allocation. because that's something that maybe for whatever reason is important, that they know when to allocate and deallocate, and they have full control. Mm. But in other cases, that may be not the thing, but I want to be able to reason about, again, let's say energy, right? And then whether, you know, I care about memory might not be important at all.
Sure.
So I think it's like, let's try to generalize this thing, and there's no good answer. That's the kind of thing.
You're right.
Or no good answer. There's nothing better than the other. You cannot just kind of stack rank them. It's just what is important, and you have to think about that.
You're totally right. I mean, look, and you mentioned C++, right? We do a lot of talking about C++. I know I blather on a lot about it because I'm passionate about it. That said, smart pointers are managed objects.
Yeah.
This is managed code.
Yes.
But it's very efficient. Nevertheless, I just wanted to bring it out there because you had mentioned that.
And
you know, this whole native versus managed thing is going completely out the window. What's happening is they're converging. And so what is native plus managed equal?
Okay.
What did you put in there?
I don't know, but this looks like poison. I'm not going to...
Don't drink that.
I don't drink that. That's... okay.
Okay.
But
managed plus native equals question mark. Converging,
it's
man.
Not manage plus, it's like manage and.
Manage and,
but
okay.
Let me give you another thing, because here we're talking about technical issues, right? But there's many other factors. For example, you want to have like time to market.
Yes.
Because maybe, you know, I want to get something out really quick. Okay, so there the programming speed is important, because even though I can say, you know, if it uses less energy, it doesn't matter, because the first one that has this app on the marketplace is going to win, and then you can always kind of, you know, make it more efficient in space or time or whatever. So sometimes, you know, there's different characteristics, or maybe think of the required level of education, okay, which is another aspect of programming, and why people like PHP, because PHP is kind of a more approachable language, or Visual Basic, or, you know, or then you have, on the other hand, you have languages like Haskell that are very kind of, you know, mathematically complex, that require, you know, a higher degree of education. So so there's like, these things are also important. So maybe, you know, if I want to have time to market, do I care about these things? No. But later I might want to say, okay, now, and so there's this whole kind of complicated state machine, I think, where you pick whatever you like. And there's a philosophy in Python where people say it's really the time to market or the programming speed that's important. Mm. So you can quickly whip up a program, and then you kind of measure and you say, okay, this part is too inefficient, and then you rewrite that in native code and you interop with that. So that's another approach that you can take. So,
excellent.
It's a very kind of, you know, balanced view of the world, I think, that you need to have where you want to go. And you see, I think you might see this in several places too, where people start, you know, you might start out with doing a quick, you know, prototype. It's like the same thing that we do, right? You do a prototype, you kind of cut certain corners, and then once you know what you're doing, then you're refining in a certain direction. Mm. And maybe you have different versions of that, of your same program, right, that kind of, you know, are optimized for different dimensions here.
Sure. But I do really like the idea of energy optimization. And as you said, it's hard to do. But then again, you can think about like the stuff that Vance Morrison does, right? The performance architect of Visual Studio, and the great Rico Mariani, who we all know and love.
Yep.
They actually would execute code running a tool while it was executing and recording. And so if there was like some way for me to know, dude, you're using way too much energy. Why are you using that much energy? And the tool could say, you know, there's other methods that solve the same problem but don't use as much energy, dude. I mean, come on, go green. I was playing. But you know what I mean?
Yes, yeah. But again, it's like, you know, like we do also need tools to do that, right?
Yes.
So it's like, you know, like, I don't know, maybe what we can do is in the phone simulator, you know, there's also like a little watt meter, you know,
yes.
Kilowatt kind of, you know, and maybe there's like, you know, you can do an analysis and say, you know, here, this line here, you know, that's where most of your energy goes.
Yep.
And again, second, the thing that I talked about, where, you know, whenever you use your network card, you see an energy spike. So maybe one way to do that, once you see that, you know, once you have some kind of profile where you can see, oh, you know, I get a kind of, you know, an energy spike whenever I do a network call. Maybe you can say, okay, now I'm kind of trying to more, you know, batch up requests or do other things. So
hey, use Volta. I'm just kidding.
But
anyway,
it's all about,
yes,
like, in order to do or to, you know, to solve a problem, you have to be able to understand where the problems are.
Yes.
And and that means that you have to kind of be aware that there are problems.
Yes.
So it's awareness. Programmer have to, and I think until now, we had a cushy life as programmers. A lot of these things we didn't have to be aware of. You mentioned security.
Mm-hmm.
Until, I think, you know, when I was a student,
mm-hmm,
security, you know, you know, who cared, right? Mm-hmm. We would write, you know. But now, of course, now security is super important.
Mm-hmm.
So these things also come and go with time, but I think mostly come,
yes,
and not so much go. And so, in some sense, programming has become much more complicated, and it's not so much about the algorithms anymore, but it's about all these kind of different things.
Absolutely. Cool, man.
Yeah.
So energy can neither be created nor destroyed, but it can be moved around from place to place.
Yes. Yeah.
So move it from the client and let the cloud take care of it. Because, you know, like you said, I mean, energy can, you have an absolute amount of energy per any given instance in time. Move it off the phone, you have to move that energy somewhere,
yes,
because your computation costs energy.
Yes, and then moving the computation can cost energy as well.
Yeah.
So, but again, it's like, you know,
that's
the
great
goal is to move the energy off the device.
So what's the message you have for developers out there then? Let's give us a final, Eric.
Okay, so my message of developers is that you kind of you have to understand the world you're living. You have to understand the context in which your program executes, and then you have to abstract. You have to then, from that, you know what details are relevant and what details are not relevant. And maybe you can make certain details irrelevant on purpose, because, you know, you say, first I want to focus on certain, it's like divide and conquer, right? You want to say, I first want to focus on these details, so I'm ignoring the other details, but you have to be aware of that. And then later you can kind of take them into account.
Mm.
But abstraction is all about hiding irrelevant details. But what that means is you have to know what is relevant and what is not relevant. So it's all about awareness. You have to be, it's like, you have to think broadly about all these kind of different dimensions of your code.
Absolutely.
And unfortunately, there's not much that programming language do in these other aspects. And I think, yeah, that, let me give you another example, that I've seen people talk about, and people do this, cosmic rays. You know,
cosmic rays, yes.
Yes, because, you know, if your program, you know, is in space,
yeah,
or even here,
yeah,
you know, there's cosmic rays,
mm,
and they kind of, you know, they change bits around and so on. But in most cases, we can ignore that. But if your program is going to kind of, you know, in the satellite or something, now suddenly you have to think about this. So there's like, you know, enormous amount of dimensions here, and sometimes you can ignore them and sometimes you cannot. The biggest mistake you can make is that you get caught with your pants down, you know, that you didn't think of one of these things, but then turns out that you had to, and then you know you create bugs in that respect.
Absolutely. Right on, Eric. Okay. Right. Thanks for taking the time to chat with us.
You're welcome.
It's always fun. And we will see you again soon.
Yes. All right.
Cheers, man.